Cosmic Shed.
You're listening to The Cosmic Shed, a show that explores the way science and storytelling collide.
We'll be talking about films, books, music, theatre, TV, and anything else that catches our curiosity. From rigorously accurate science fact to ridiculously speculative science fiction.
We don't want to nitpick, but to celebrate the ways science and art can complement and enrich each other.
Mostly, we just want to talk about nerdy things that make us happy.
We've decided to do all of this from a crumbling garden shed somewhere in suburban Bristol.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between. Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of The Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew, and with me today is...
Ben.
This episode is a little bit different to anything we've done before, because... Ben and I have been making a film about Diamond Light Source. This is an audio version of the film. More details about the film will be on the website. And what we've been doing is interviewing three scientists. There's Johnny Brooks Bartlett, who's a mathematician, Andy Beale, who's a chemist, and Natasha Stephen, who's a geologist.
They shoot light at things, basically, don't they? They fire very intense beams of light at stuff to have a look at it in great detail. And the film has got to be pretty short, but these three people said lots of interesting things, so we wanted to get some of the extra stuff that they talked about out on the podcast.
I mean, Diamond Light Source is amazing. These guys are amazing. I particularly enjoy the way you can hear Johnny Brooks Bartlett's smile as he talks about this place.
Yeah, they're all very passionate about science and maths and... firing beams of light at things.
Yeah. So anyway, here it is.
The first time I went to Diamond, I was a little bit overwhelmed with the whole thing that is Diamond. It's a lab and it can do everything you've ever dreamt of with your samples. So walking through the door, it's a massive, beautiful, shiny building and the labs are incredible and there is everything you could ever want. But it's incredibly overwhelming to go in and kind of been given the freedom to, right, this is your lab, everyone's going to do what you tell them to do. And yeah, let's have fun with it.
When you walk into the atrium already, you get the feeling that this is something quite significant because you come in, you know, it's a very large open atrium building. And then, of course, you walk across the footbridge, you get an oversight of all the beam lines coming out from the, you know, the storage ring, and you can see the end stations, and you can see they're all slightly different in the design for a particular purpose. So I think it's an impressive sight.
Diamond Light Source is absolutely amazing. I come in, and as soon as you walk through into the massive synchrotron, the ring area, it's just like going into another world. There's all these pipes, these wires, these massive magnets around the place. For me, it hasn't lost its novelty yet. It's just absolutely fantastic.
My name's Natasha Stephen. I'm a scientist at Plymouth University and I look at Martian meteorites. And we're looking at how we can link up science that we can do on the samples in labs on Earth with the science that's being done in satellites and rovers on the surface of the planet.
My name's Andrew Beale. I'm a chemist based at the research complex at Harwell, right next to Diamond Light Source. And I use synchrotron radiation. A synchrotron is a particle accelerator that generates very intense light that we utilise for our research. My interest in research, particularly at Diamond Light Source, is trying to understand why materials behave the way they do, with a view to designing better materials that can be used more efficiently in everyday life.
My name is Johnny Brooks Bartlett. I'm a mathematician and I am a research student at the University of Oxford. What I do is X-ray crystallography, and what that means is I grow crystals, namely of proteins, and I use the X-rays at Diamond Light Source to irradiate those protein crystals to have a look at what the crystals are made of and the damage that the X-rays cause to those samples.
Diamond Light Source is a facility that basically uses a particle accelerator to generate a very, very pure beam of energy, so a beam of light.
We whiz electrons around really, really fast in a circle, and when those electrons get to almost the speed of light, 99.99999% of the speed of light.
This beam of electron particles, as it hits a bending magnet, the beam of electron particles goes one way and then this light goes down this kind of line, and there's a beam line.
And they utilise that beam that's generated from that particle accelerator in a range of different ways.
Depending on the application that you wish to employ or particular type of measurement you'd like to make, you can use the components in the beamline to more or less select a particular wavelength of the light that you're interested in to do your particular measurement.
Some of the beamlines can convert that into infrared, some of them convert it into x-rays, some of them use that for tomography, so to look at the shape and the structure of something in three dimensions. Some of them use it to look at the atomic scale features.
That means that we can really study the small atomic structure of any material we like. And so I work with proteins, and proteins are way too small to see under a microscope. Therefore, we need to use x-rays to actually penetrate those crystals and understand what they look like from the patterns that are produced from the x-rays. And how I do that is the actual electrons will travel in straight lines, but we need to use magnets to bend the electrons into the path that we want. So diamond is actually not a circle as such. It's a 48-sided polygon. So actually you've got straight sides and then a magnet to bend the electron, and a straight side and a magnet to bend the electron. And so actually at each point that the electron bends, that's when it starts to release light. It releases x-rays because of the speed that it goes at. So when those x-rays now are released from the electron, they go through a series of mirrors, and we can focus the x-ray beam using those mirrors into the shape and into the position we want. And then we fire that at a sample, and my samples are crystals that are made of protein. So we fire the x-ray at a sample, the x-rays interact with the electrons in the crystal, which is why all we see is the contours, these outlines of the electrons and how dense it is inside the crystal. And then from there, we can say, well, I know exactly what my protein is made of, because we usually know what it's made of before we know what it's shaped like. And then I can say, well, I can fit this structure into the electron density where I know there should be stuff.
I'm a geologist by training. My first degree was in geology, and I did a master's in volcanology, looking at a particular volcanic region in Iceland. And I really enjoyed the project, and I loved working with volcanic rocks. I'm an igneous person. You can ask any geologist which type of rock they prefer, and they always have a favourite. And I decided I wanted to carry on working on volcanic rocks, and I wanted to try and do something a bit different to contribute to science. And I decided that Mars was this huge volcanic planet that was near us, and some of the largest volcanoes anywhere in the solar system. In fact, the largest volcano anywhere in the solar system is on Mars. It's Olympus Mons. And we don't know very much about any of those volcanoes, and there were very few people studying Mars. So I decided to take my expertise away from Earth volcanoes and move into Martian volcanoes.
In chemistry, we like to look at sort of what we call functional groups, key components of a molecule that often give its properties. You generally, therefore, utilize this information to kind of understand what the finer properties are of a material. A lot of the research we're doing at the moment is trying to design catalytic materials that can make fuels more efficiently and in a more sustainable way. Catalytic material is a material that can accelerate a chemical reaction so we can create our product more quickly and more efficiently. A lot of people are interested in trying to understand exactly why the material that they've made works the way it does. It's really coming here and doing the measurements under the correct process conditions with this top of the range facility that you can see the subtle differences that make sample A better than sample B. And sometimes the subtle differences that you can measure here make the difference. And of course, the companies that are highly engaged in this process, in utilising the facility here, are now getting slightly ahead of the competitors in the market.
Meteorites are generated from a parent body, that's how we describe it, and that parent body doesn't have to be a planet, although obviously Mars is a planet. We have meteorites from the moon, our moon, and we have meteorites from asteroids as well, and they're all called parent bodies. And what happens is there's a lot of debris in space, and every so often in space these things collide, and if they collide with enough force, enough impact, it can actually fragment the surface of that body, and smaller pieces get ejected off that body and fly around in space, and occasionally orbits line up and things smack the surface of Earth. And that's why we have impact craters all over the surface of Earth. And if you find an impact crater, there's usually an impactor somewhere in the centre, and there are meteorites.
A protein is a biological machine. It's inside our bodies and it does anything you can think of inside the body. When you feel pain, it's usually proteins that carry the response from wherever it is in the body that you feel the pain to your brain. If you digest things, those digestive machines, they're proteins. And so if I'm a pharmaceutical company and I want to design a drug to, say, stop you from feeling pain or to get your digestive system going, then I need to be able to see what the protein looks like. Any material The structure of the material is more important to its function than what it's made out of, which is the reason why we need to know what these things look like. And so actually, if I can see what this protein looks like, then I might be able to design drugs, small molecules that may bind to the protein to either stop it from doing its job or enhance it doing its job. So actually, protein crystallography has huge implications in structural-based drug design.
A lot of scientific analyses actually requires you to destroy the sample to generate the data that you want from it. And when we're talking about these rocks that have come from space, they are a finite resource. We don't know when we're going to get the next one. We can't predict it, unfortunately. We don't want to destroy them. So we try and use non-destructive techniques where we still have the sample at the end. And I like to describe it in a way that's kind of similar to going to the hospital. If you were to break your arm, you obviously don't want to cut your arm open to see what you've done and try and fix it. That wouldn't be useful, so you want to try and do it in a non-destructive way. So we use the same techniques. We use x-rays, so you can look inside the samples without obviously having to cut them open, which is a fantastic start, and we can see the structure of these samples. But we have a range of detectors that allow us to look at other things as well. So not only do we generate images of the samples, we can actually analyze them in terms of the chemical makeup of them. And all of that can be done in the microscope without destroying them. For us, Diamond Light Source is kind of the final step in our process. We can do a lot of the work here at Plymouth University, but Diamond is kind of that final step where the way in which Diamond generates its energy, instead of x-rays or infrared or UV, it generates a very pure beam of light, and that purity allows us to look at things in a much better resolution than we can generate in the labs here, purely because of the way in which it's formed. So Diamond for us allows us to use our data as a starting point to actually generate data from our Martian meteorites on Earth. That's the same process that the satellites and the rovers at and on Mars are actually doing as well. So it's exactly the same technique. There's a satellite orbiting Mars that's mapping the surface of Mars using infrared. We're using Diamond to generate that same infrared, but we're looking at the smaller scale features in our rocks, and then we're directly comparing the two.
The first step, once you come to Diamond, you need samples to irradiate with x-rays. So actually what I do is I start making protein crystals. I get purified protein, so I come to Diamond with purified protein, and then I mix it in solutions and wait for it to grow. And often the crystals I grow, they don't take very long to grow. You can see them grow in like half an hour. But now I have crystals. These crystals are, imagine a millimeter on a ruler and go 10 times smaller than that. That's actually quite a big crystal. And so I've got a tenth of a millimeter size crystal. And now I've got a loop that's roughly the same size. And I sit at the microscope, have a look, and then there might be crystals in there, and I just go in with my loop and I just try and pick it out. If you imagine, these crystals are really fragile. So actually, they'll break off in the solution, and then you just get shrapnel and all this stuff in there. So you go in with a loop, trying to get your crystal, and let's say I'm lucky, I get my crystal out. We take it and put it onto a beamline. So you sit down at the computer controls and we decide what strategy do we want to irradiate this crystal. If you really want to see the small atoms and side chains, you need to blast it a lot. But that also means if you do a lot of, if it's very intense, the protein dies really quickly. Light interacts with all of the tiny, tiny molecules and atoms that the protein is made out of. And so my actual research is actually focused on studying that damage and how that damage in the protein affects the data that we see. And so there's this balancing game on how much data you want to collect, what is enough that you need. Is your protein crystal very sensitive? Once you've decided, then you sit down and take a data set. So by that, you just irradiate a crystal with x-rays and rotate a little bit, irradiate a crystal again, and you'll get a series of images, usually hundreds of images. But because I'm doing radiation damage studies myself, I just want to see the crystal die. I want to see it die. So I'll get thousands and thousands of images.
For us, a lot of our measurements recently have been imaging type experiments. So rather than say measuring a single point in a sample, we now actually do a map. So there we need to compromise a little bit on data quality, but we then get a two-dimensional or three-dimensional distribution of the components in our sample and how these change. And this is quite a novel way of measuring materials now. Particularly we're interested in nanoparticles, so the nanoparticle components in some of these catalytic materials are the key components that give it the catalytic functionality. And we know that typically that there's a very specific particle size that is desired through a catalytic process. But most of the measurements you do in your laboratory will only give you a number, a single number. By doing sort of spatially resolved study, as we do, an imaging type study, we can sort of say about individual particles and where the particles that are of critical size are. Trying to understand how atoms behave, how they build up in complexity. I mean, that is really fascinating, yeah, because we don't really understand this well as we would like. In the future, a lot of this process should become less trial and error and more design. And that way we can be more efficient with the materials that we're using. It's kind of a blueprint for us trying to realise in the longer term how we should do things better.
There are about 45,000 known meteorites on Earth. They're made up of minerals. And the minerals are very, very similar, in most cases, to the minerals we have on Earth. With the Martian meteorites in particular, the most similar ones are like some of the volcanic rocks we might have from Iceland, Hawaii, from Italy. But they have structures in them which are completely unique to Mars. And these structures are very, very small. Diamond allows us to actually map these really unique Martian features because we can see them on a much smaller scale. And that allows us to then go back and reevaluate the spacecraft data and compare them. And we've actually been able to find some of those small scale features in data sets that have existed on Earth for 10, 15 years already. And they haven't been noticed before because nobody knew to look for them.
One of the things that really inspired me to get involved in this science, first off, I didn't just have to sit down and do maths on pen and paper. You know, I could walk into the lab, I could grow crystals, I could go to massive synchrotrons, you know, blast my crystals with X-rays. It's really exciting.
I can think back and think, when did I really want to get into science? And I can be on beaches in Scotland as like a four-year-old collecting fossils and crystals and things and taking them to show people. And I guess that's kind of when I knew, right, well, I'm clearly very interested in geology. So I think it's something you either really want to do and you're really passionate about, or you don't. And I think if you are truly passionate about any subject, that's kind of where it is.
One of the things that I absolutely love about maths is how it actually applies to science and nature. Maths is underpins everything. It underpins all the sciences, and it's a tool that we use in the sciences to understand the world around us. So in fact, being able to use maths for this particular science has been really useful to me, and actually has enabled me to come at the science from a completely different perspective, but also understand it from a very different perspective to, say, a biologist or a biochemist. Diamond doesn't just use biological molecules, it uses lots of other inorganic materials. And one of the things I was really surprised to hear was that Rolls-Royce actually used diamond to have a look at the material of the plane wings to make sure that the atomic structure of the materials for their planes wasn't going to crack and was going to withstand the forces in the air. To know that Rolls-Royce used diamond as well for things like, you know, airplane materials, it's fantastic. Love it.
It's a place that never stands still. So there's always new developments. And I've been very lucky enough to be privy to some of the developments on this beamline, actually been carrying out some developmental work that's enabling new technology to come and become accessible to a wider range of experimentalists.
The really fascinating thing is that when we carry out measurements here at Diamond Light Source, we see things that we didn't think we would see, that were even possible to see, and that people therefore couldn't even know if they were important or not for understanding why a material possesses the properties it does. The fact that you're the first to see it is very exciting.
Diamond is definitely something that now I've used, I want to be able to go back. It was a fantastic experience to have people that were willing to try everything that you came up with. And it wasn't a question of, oh, well, we can't really do that because we don't have this. It's like, well, we don't have that, but we'll do our best to make it for you whilst you're here, and we will make it happen. It's just ideas, inquiry, and then results. Sometimes things worked, sometimes they didn't. But when they worked, it gave us something amazing, and when they didn't, we knew to try something in a slightly different way. And it was science in its purest form, which was an amazing experience to have.
Thank you very much indeed to Johnny, Andy and Natasha. You can watch the film In Lionel, the Spaceship of Our Imagination, Lionel is a camper fan, but also a cinema, and he is going to be appearing at various festivals for many years to come, so long as the rust holds out.
The video is not quite ready yet, but we will put it up at our website, thecosmicshed.com. More details about us.
Also available on that website and on Facebook. Also find us on Twitter.
At The Cosmic Shed.
Patreon.com/TheCosmicShed, where you can watch another film we've made, but that one's about us. And you could go to audibletrial.com/TheCosmicShed and have a free audiobook of your choice. I'd find one about particle physics. Thank you very much indeed to Diamond Light Source. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.